Chairperson Cole, will you lead us in the salute to our flag?
Pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you. May be seated. Okay, our clerk will now take the roll call. Starting with the Planning Commission. Commissioner Cole. Roll call. Commissioner LeFay.
Here.
Commissioner Goldsmith is absent. Commissioner Cornwell.
Here.
Commissioner Black.
Here.
Commissioner Moore.
Here.
Commissioner Turner. Appears to be absent. The council. Councilmember Watson.
Here.
Councilmember Hansen.
Here.
Councilmember Olson.
Here.
Councilmember Ingram.
Here.
Councilmembers Mutchler and Zimmerman are absent. Councilmember Goodrich.
Here.
Okay, Councilperson Zimmerman and Councilperson Mutchler have requested an absence. Spring break, they're off doing things with their children. I would entertain a motion to approve their absence.
Second.
Moved and second. All in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Okay. All opposed? None. Motion carries. Councilperson Goldsmith has requested Planning Commission member Goldsmith has requested absence. So, Planning Commission members, a motion to approve that.
Second.
Okay, moving second. All in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All opposed? Okay, that motion carries. We're down to business. Thank you for all for coming. This is a great thing. I'm not so sure about the great acoustics, but I think it's significant more than you think having it here, and I think it's a great thing. So I will turn So we're going to need to be extra special quiet because it's so hard to hear everything. Thank you.
Can I just put the lights
on
something?
No, they don't have lights here. Those are just me.
They work. They're right over there.
Right behind you, right there, maybe?
We're just going to project.
Let there be light. There you go. Okay, first up is a public comment period. Anything that's not on tonight's agenda, the only thing that's on tonight's agenda is the park plans or anything else anyone would like to speak for, would anyone like to come forward and speak? We don't have a podium, so I guess you can stand up where you're sitting. Seeing none. Okay, good, we're through with that. Okay, Planning Commission minutes approval. I'm going to let our Planning Commission chairman take care of that.
Thank you for your attention. Commissioners, we have minutes of February 11th, 2012 meeting of the Planning Commission. Any corrections to the minutes? During the minutes of January 11th, 2012 are approved. Next, we have the minutes of the February 15th, 2012 Planning Commission meeting. Any additions, corrections to those minutes? Hearing none, the minutes of February 15th, 2012 are approved as presented. Next up is our minutes of March 14th, 2012 Planning Commission meeting.
I have one correction on page 2 of those minutes, on the second to last paragraph, fourth line up from the bottom where it says plant. There needs to be some sort of plan. That should actually be plan.
Plan?
Plan instead of plan.
Okay, so typo on page 2. Any other corrections? Minutes of March 14th, 2012 are approved with the typo correction on page 2 from plant plan.
Thank you. Okay, regular city council, I accept a motion to to accept the consent agenda. Moved and seconded. All in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All opposed? Motion carries. Great. Okay, now we're going to turn on to the Parks Master Plan Update Discussion. Mr. Burnett.
I'm going to trust over this way so I can see it.
Thank you, Mr. Council. We also have some members of our Parks Recreation and Fairs Advisory Board. Looks like we have Rebecca Czar. Bob Nordhaus, Julian Connell, and it looks like that's who we have from our PERTAP board. Can you all hear me relatively well?
Relatively.
The reason why we wanted to have this joint meeting, first of all, at the Council's direction and Planning Commission's request, there was a desire to start having joint meetings between the Planning Commission and the Council, especially when we have relatively big or complicated items that we're going to be tackling in the future. In the past, we have had a number of initiatives that have come through at various times, and once they get all the way up to Council, there's a question of, where did this come from? Why are we even looking at this? That can make staff feel silly, it can make Planning Commission feel like they've spun their wheels, and it can give the public the perception that we don't know what we're doing. So in order to head that off at the pass, we decided to have a joint meeting, actually four of them this year, and the first of them is going to be on the Parks Plan. Now, why the Parks Plan? The Parks Plan and Park Planning is one of those items that really engages the public or has the ability to engage the public just because it is so inviting by its nature. Everybody feels some ownership over parks, everybody feels some control over parks, and everybody's ready to cast blame if parks aren't working as well as maybe they should or could. So as we're going to go through this presentation, I'm going to ask you to try to hold your questions back as much as you can, with the exception of you simply can't hear me. So we can go through and talk about possibly what the state of our parks planning is right now, and then determine what we're going to do with that parks plan in the future. So I'll see whether or not this works. Can you all hear me okay? Alright. So, the goal of the meeting is to provide a direction to the park plan updates. We're planning, we're expecting to take most of this next year, until around fall or early winter of 2012. We also want to talk about what the role of the Planning Commission is, what the role of the Parks Recreation Trails Advisory Board is, what the community is going to do. And then, of course, Council, you have your role pretty well cut out for you. You decide whether or not the plan is good or bad after holding at least one public hearing. Also want to talk about a timeline, which we may be able to get to and more formalize as a result of this meeting. Are we talking about just small changes, in which case we might be able to provide a plan to you relatively shortly? Or are we talking about great big do-it-all-from-scratch changes, in which case we might need to delay our timeline a little bit? Also want to go through the history of the parks planning process, talk a little bit about what the current vision is, see if there's some disagreement over what the current vision is it still appropriate, and then talk about possible points of emphasis for the new plan. So, a couple of primary questions for you to sort of get your mind frame. Does the current plan, which was adopted in 2008, contain assumptions or plans that are no longer achievable? We'll talk a little bit about why they might not be achievable any longer. Also talk about why because development is cyclical and because the economy is also cyclical, usually, it might be a good idea to take a step back and not plan from the perspective of the highest points of the economy or the perspective of the lowest points of the recession. We also wanted to ask whether or not the existing plan contains a framework that is no longer desirable. Maybe we still want everything that the plan has, but maybe we recognize that we actually can't achieve that, and maybe could never achieve that. So a little bit of history for the Parks Planning. This is a very simplified history. If you go to the Parks Planning website that our city clerk Sam Taylor has provided, we have all of these different plans on there, so you can kind of see how things have evolved. Beginning in 1982, and obviously we've had parks for longer than 1982, we adopted an ordinance that required that as a condition of development, land be dedicated for developments over a certain size. That was in an effort to basically respond to the concept that as growth occurs, as development occurs, well, gosh, by golly, we should really have parks that go right along the way, and maybe are located in close proximity to that development. In 1989, apparently from recognizing that not every land development will have land that can actually be dedicated, but that every land development for residential use will have some additional need for parks, or will have people that do need parks. There is an ordinance adopted that allows for the dedication, the payment of fees in lieu of land dedication. Now it's important to note here that in 1989, we still wanted land first, and only if you could not dedicate the land that the city needed could you pay in lieu payments, or in lieu payments, I should say. 1993, as a result of the Growth Management Act, we started charging impact fees. Any residential development that came through needed to pay park impact fees, ostensibly for the construction and development of parks that were required or become necessary as a result of growth. That was soon followed in 1996 by the Open Space Recreation Comprehensive Plan Amendment, which really did provide that plan for parks. I don't know that it was the first plan, but it was really the first formalized plan that was in compliance with the Growth Management Act. In 2001, an update to that plan was created, and that was intended to last for the 6-year period from 2002 to 2008. In 2006, 2007, 2008, a dedicated group of citizens in cooperation with the city staff and the various boards that we have updated that plan to create the Parks, Recreation, and Trails Master Plan. And that's the plan that we have right now. There are some similar features to all of those plans, and there are also some differences. First, the city has always identified land acquisition as the primary method of development mitigating itself. In other words, let's get more parks in rather than necessarily let's improve the existing parks, although that was a major component of it. Park acquisition was targeted in the areas of growth. So as development came in, the idea was if there wasn't a park in there already, you would put a park in close proximity to that growth coming in. It's important to note that 2001 was kind of a fork in the road, because up until that point, we had a dedicated parks department that managed parks and parks planning, and also had a dedicated fund to manage park maintenance. Very important point for park maintenance. We used to, as those of you who have dealt with finances in the city know, we plan in silos, or our money goes into silos. So if you get a dollar to the city, that dollar can't necessarily be used for absolutely everything. A park's dollar has a different color, so to speak, than a traffic dollar. So you can't use road money for parks necessarily. The same here, where a public works dollar, a park public works maintenance dollar, is generally intended to pay for our crew to go out and maintain our roads, maintain our storm lines, maintain our sewer lines, and maintain our parks. And it's really, since there is that finite amount of money that goes through, our public works department needs to basically go around and put out fires. So where the biggest issue is, that's where our maintenance goes. If we have a sewer break, we're going to fix that sewer break instead of cutting the lines of the parks, if the choice had to be made. If there was a condition on the roads where there's a life safety factor, the roads get fixed first. And as those of you that have worked with the PERTAP or parks know, often the simple realities are when money gets tight, parks are one of the first, if not the first, to have their budget constrained. That's a fact of life. life in this jurisdiction and in most other jurisdictions. Again, right now Public Works manages the parks, and planning community development generally manages the long-range plan. So as we go through this process, at some point as we go on down the line, community development is going to hand off to Public Works as far as the management of the finances of how we're going to budget some of the projects we're talking about. So the existing plan, level of service, I think everybody has become pretty familiar with level of service, but for those that aren't, level of service is basically the state of Washington's way of saying, how do you measure success? How do you measure success for roads? How do you measure success for parks? How do you measure success for schools? And there's a variety of different ways of measuring it. Schools might be based on the number of textbooks for kids, the amount of teacher to student ratio. Transportation, as you know, generally follows an A, B, C, D level based on the congestion in, on the roads. Parks historically have been based on what we base ours on. How many parks acres do you have per certain number of people? With the idea that the best way of measuring parks is, the better your park system is, the more park areas you have. Now, as we'll talk about a little bit later, that might not always be the best measurement, where you could be park rich but amenity poor, where you can have a lot of parks but find that you really don't have a park system that you feel proud of. Partly as a response to the more is better for parks and let's acquire park land, trail dedications and connectivity has sort of lagged, where we sometimes, when we have developments come in, have development that put in a new trail or a new sidewalk, and it'll start at one end of their property and maybe go into the center where there might be a park. But it might not be connected to any other development close to it, or for anyone else that might want to use that park, or for anyone that might want to use the trail for something more than walking back and forth for 2 or 300 yards. The 2008 plan projected approximately $30.4 million in total capital costs from 2005 to 2025. Quite a bit of money. If you look at the way that it's calculated, it might be on the low end if you combine what the projects that we envisioned over 20 years were combined with the true cost of acquisition and development. One thing that it did not include, though, were the costs of maintaining those parks, which could be very, very significant. I don't have the numbers in front of me, and I don't know if the numbers actually exist to anticipate just how much it could potentially cost. But for a very conservative measure, if we assume that it would require one new full-time person to take on the additional $30 million, and if that person also required a vehicle, you're probably looking at least $100,000 per year over a 20-year period. So easily $2 million that is not addressed in our current parks plan. It's likely that it's going to be quite a bit higher. That's something that could be resolved fairly quickly by the city determining that we would dedicate that much funding to that person or persons. That's a relatively easy fix if we wanted to go that direction. It doesn't change the plan, but it is a commitment that we as staff feel needs to be put in there, a commitment or at least a line item saying, we recognize those additional costs, and we as a city feel that it is reasonable at some point in the next 20 years to start paying for those. When we talk about measuring the success of the plan, again, we need to look back at what the level of service is. What does our plan say we will measure success by? It says we'll measure success by the number of acres per 1,000 people. And based upon that, we expect 8 acres per 1,000 people. Based on that, we're doing a great job. We have, in city parks, about 9 acres of parks per 1,000 people. If you count in, though, the private parks, such as the Pacific Highlands, if you count in the school facilities, the huge parks and ball fields that the public does have access to, at least not during school hours, the city has about 370 acres of parks, which translates into about 31 acres of parkland or recreation land that is available to the public to use. That's an enormous number of parks. And so one could say, hey, we're all done. We only want 8 acres of parks per 1,000 people. We actually have 31 in one way of measuring. Done, thank you very much, we're able to maintain, we're good. But I think what you've all heard, and I know the staff has heard, and I think the Parks, Recreation, and Trails Advisory Board has said, is that we don't, that really the parks that we have aren't connected, that they don't provide the real park atmosphere that the city wants. And if that's true, if we feel that while we are attaining our measurement of success by that acreage, but we're not attaining our measurement of success by our common sense thinking, are we satisfied with our parks? Then that is a reason for thinking about changing the parks, part of the parks plan. I have just a diagram here of the existing parks, public and private. We have about 30 different parks, public and private, throughout the city. Many of you, many of me, don't realize that we have all those parks or have never been to them. And this just stopped working. But up in the northern part of the city, there is a lot of parks. I remember that when I lived in the city or around the city for my entire life, I would expect that it's probably the same for most of the citizens of Portville, where there's a simple not knowing that there are those park amenities, not knowing they have access to them, and not knowing how to connect to them. Which brings up another point. If the parks that we have, which are mostly neighborhood parks, if they mostly serve the neighborhoods that they exist in, or at the end of a cul-de-sac, or a current buried in the back, are they actually achieving what we want? Is that what we want, to have everybody have their own neighborhood park within their subdivision and maybe only use that park? Or are we wanting to measure our success a little bit differently? So, do more parks mean a better park system? And that, as I say in the staff report, is an open-ended question. It may be that more parks are great, and that's exactly what we want. And if that's the case, this is a very simple process. Should connectivity to existing parks be prioritized, though? Do we want, do our citizens want to be able to use that neighborhood park? That is my third space, my third place that I go to, and I'm always going to go to that park space when I need to go to a park. Or do our citizens want to explore their city, explore different parks, see different amenities that are different in each park? Should we make sure the future park acquisition is more targeted? Because in that map that I just showed you, there are parks where a lot of our citizens live here, and there are not parks where a lot of our other citizens live, such as in this area, such as along the rural land. So, staff does have some proposals. I'm talking to the Parks Board and talking to some others. It's always easier to react to a proposal and kind of just spitball ideas. So this is a straw man. You feel free to shoot me down when the time comes. But I want to put some of these ideas out there just to see what does it. The existing plans that we have are based on 20 years of work, of dedicated work from mostly citizen volunteers. They also include the results of a number of different surveys. And generally speaking, the perspective of the community will stay the same. People still want to have safe parks. They still want to have connectivity. They still want to have places for their kids to play. That's not going to change a great deal from survey to survey. And so it would be pretty ridiculous to throw out the existing parks plan when so much time and effort and research went into it. Also have to remember right now, city doesn't have a whole bunch of money to spend on hiring a consultant to come in, whereas some of the previous parks plans, there were consultants out there. It would seem that this would be an efficient use of money to try to retain as much as possible. But then within that, emphasize trails and trail connectivity. And here I have a diagram. Some of you aren't too happy with the transpo group now, so if you want, you can choose to ignore the logo down there, because we are not going to be hiring them for this. But they do have some really great ideas. One of them is RDI, which means Route Direct. pregnancy test basically does is it looks at the labor demand and it determines are there opportunities, relatively inexpensive opportunities, to improve connectivity. So the example here, for those that can't see, this is a house, and for argument's sake, let's say that this is a park. Right now, this house is a fertilizer, it's 375 feet away from it, 1 or 2 minute walk. But in reality, since there are houses here, it takes 1,850 feet for them to walk from here to here, basically. Depending on the attractiveness of the park and the safety of that route of travel, some people won't make that trip. But if you put in a new connector there using existing easements or potentially acquiring new easements, you can reduce that 1,650-foot travel to 450 feet. And the way that Transpo analyzes it is they basically divide one by another, divide the potential by the actual. So it increases it up. That's something that the city staff, volunteers, interns, can you predict by actually walking the land and identifying parks and determining are there connectivity points that are missing? Are there opportunities here? And I might get to it later, but in case I don't have anything to say right now, wherever we can combine plans together, it's going to be a good thing. So in our transportation plan, one of the things that it puts forward is sidewalks, multimodal opportunities, pedestrian access. And we dedicate good money to funding some of those improvements. If we can also have an overlap with the park system to say, hey, that transportation improvement with these very minor alterations could also be a parks improvement, we're killing two birds with one stone. Often, and not all cases, but often, with grants coming from the feds and the state, there are requirements for multimodal. We're dealing with Thornton Road for a street right now, and that requires sidewalks. If we can decide to step back from our long-held belief that sidewalk does not equal trail, and instead say sometimes we will allow sidewalks to equal trails if it provides connectivity, it can be a mutual benefit. I want to give you a local example here. And of course, now the name of the park is escaping me. Sandy, we're going to move into this area. What's the name of the park here?
Around Aquarius?
Around Aquarius.
Cedar. Cedar Creek? Cedar.
Yeah.
I don't remember the name of it.
Yeah.
I've wiped it from my mind.
Cedar Creek. Yeah. Cedar. One of the 25 parks that we have is up here.
It's Cedar Creek.
Cedar Creek. Mm-hmm. This is definitely not working. Because this one. So, we have a house right there. That house is about 150 feet away from that park. It is growth class. Since there is no easement and no connectivity, and I don't have a solution to this specific one, it's just an example. Because there is no connectivity, if this guy wants to use this park and doesn't get along with his neighbors, they need to walk almost a mile to get to that park. Where, if the city were to be able to find an easement or some kind of access point here, they're able to go into that park.
That's a poor example.
That's a poor example?
Well, yeah, because there is connectivity. You enter from both sides.
You enter, well, here, this is all privately owned.
No? There's not access.
So, for example, there are a number of places in Ferndale where there is a lack of connectivity. And the general rule of thumb is if someone is willing to walk to a park, they will. If they don't have to drive to a park, they might as well drive to any other park in Ferndale. So, once you get into the car, your neighborhood parks are diminished. They're going down Pioneer Park, maybe they're even going out to the Bellingham or the Linden to go after a specific park amenity. And that's something where going through this process, if you choose to send us in that direction, we can go out there and we can look at these neighborhoods and see where is there connectivity or where is there a lack of connectivity. I don't know if you can see the satellite here, but it is available on our website. there is a potential then with targeted trail acquisitions to actually start to form a loop system, which is something that we staff heard a lot about, where trails become an experience, where actually walking on the trail or running on the trail and being able to start here and end up back at your house and have smaller loops too, is a benefit where people of a certain age and of all ages really aren't necessarily using parks for the playground equipment. They're not necessarily part of a soccer team playing frisbee golf, but maybe they just want to get out and walk. There are a few opportunities to have a real good and safe walk in Fernville that is meaningful where you can get from one place to another. There is potential here by also utilizing school sites, and we're prepared to talk to the school and they're prepared to talk to us as well, to use some of those sites for that trail connectivity, also taking advantage of some properties that the city already owns to create trail space, that in 20 years, or maybe less, we could have a very good loop system, which would be just a substantial amenity for folks all throughout the program. As I said, reducing parkland acquisition in such areas that are underserved, such as Portaway and Lowdown, then also establish the level of service based less on the amount of parks per thousand people, but more on the proximity to parks, where a lot of jurisdictions have developed level of service that say something to the effect of, our goal is that 80% of the households in the city of Fernville are going to be within a 10-minute walk or a quarter mile of a park. That way we would be able to say, well, how do we bring them into that quarter mile of a park? Well, we do it with trails. We try to get them connected to existing parks, and only where they cannot connect to those existing parks or are not within a certain radius of those parks will we then target after acquisition. Generally speaking, parkland acquisition costs more than the corresponding amount of trails. We developed this now parks within a half mile buffer. A lot of these buffers actually overlap, as you can see by the cloud being not just a circle. So if we cut it down a quarter mile, it would still be relatively true. Parks within a half mile buffer, or approximately a 20-minute walk, which is the outside of someone just saying, heck with it, I'm going to go take a walk. It encompasses already about 80 or maybe even 90% of the households in Fernville. All of Church Road, all of Thornton, all of downtown. Where we are underserved is up at Portal and again down here at the mountain. So those would be the areas where we target for park acquisition. Here is an area where we would target for trail connectivity. Also, I have on there, our well-served areas, quote unquote, actually connected. And there are cases, possibly not the one example I gave, but are there cases where where we would think is connected actually is Councilmember Hanson's house might be a place where we would say, hey, they're within close proximity relatively, or within what we think is close proximity, but because of where it's located at the bottom of a hill, it might not actually be connected. In line with this idea, it could potentially provide the city with the opportunity to target some more major acquisitions to say, rather than concentrating on this neighborhood park concept where we already have a fair number, maybe it's time for the city to start talking about the crowns and the jewel, so to speak. And then we have the Riverside Golf Course Park or River Place shown up here. I'm going to get to a couple of other ideas in just a second. But this concept is one that has been championed by couple of people, or at least one person in the audience, as a potential fourth park if you include in or in and around the Nooksack, where the Nooksack River and the fact that it runs through Fernville is a unique amenity to Fernville. And many on both sides of the counter have said that we need to take full advantage of this to give our citizens a new perspective on the Nooksack, new opportunities for recreation, but also to provide tourists with a destination attraction in Fernville where they can come in, recreate, and then spend all of the money at Fernville shops. One thing with this, two things, This concept is included in the Main Street Master Plan that was approved as part of the planned action. The concept of having a park recreation area here, generally speaking. But this is not necessarily growth related, and that's something where, as we talk about impact fees, impact fees need to pay for the developments that result become needed as a result of growth. There is some question as to whether or not all of this or most of this would be the result of growth as compared to the result of simply the city wanting it. Do we want or need this now? Do the existing citizens want or need this now? Or does it become necessary only because future citizens want to come in? The question is asked because the funding changes. If we can't pay for the acquisition and development for this only or mostly out of impact fees, we need to come up with another way to fund it. Maybe it's private, maybe it's public partnership, maybe it's a variety of things. But that's something that needs to be identified in the parks plan as far as the assumptions if we choose to go down this route. We also need to determine the city's vision for citizen proposed facilities and whether or not those projects should be included in the plan. What are the funding expectations for those projects? What land, if any, would be dedicated by the city? I have three different examples on here, and they're very different ideas. One of them is a Star Park. A lot of you might be familiar with the Smiles Park up in Linden that has just world-class playground equipment and imagination for children and young adults. The Parks Board has been looking at doing something maybe not exactly similar, but having just a world-class playground experience that would draw people from all throughout the Northwest Washington. And they looked at having a site just south of Pioneer between the southern parking lot next to Ferndale Road and the cabins as being this potential star park. Again, is that as a result of growth, or is it something we feel that our existing children actually need and want? The other one, and you may have heard that there is a concept of a double dome or a swimming pool out there. I'll get to that. The next one is a Veterans Memorial that the City Council has said the Veterans Memorial can use a portion of Bender Park to provide a memorial for servicemen and women who have lives in service of the country. That is underway, the planning is underway. One of the things that the city should determine is whether if we're going to put it into the parks plan, and if we're not going to put some things into the parks plan, in order to provide those that are advocates of it with the knowledge of, okay, this could happen, the city's willing to make this happen to a certain extent, or is willing to dedicate these funds, or the city is not, and this is not going to happen. That will allow the advocates of these to either move forward with their proposals or get on with their lives instead of, you know, continuing to address it. An example with the traffic program is for 30 years, we were saying that the main way to solve the Main Street problem, one of the main ways, was to connect Church all the way down the Silver. That was going to be the solution. We looked at the studies and we saw, gosh, you know, that would help some, but it wouldn't solve it. And so what the city did is we said, you know what, that's pretty much off the table right now. That's not going to solve everything, so let's stop talking about it like it is going to solve everything. We did the same thing with the main all-over cover, where that would solve some issues, but it wouldn't solve others. Try to get some of those things off the table that really would not fix everything. It might be the time to do that with some of these, or to dedicate the city to making it happen. And we're almost done. I really appreciate you listening. Now I'm not going to hear you, but thank you for listening. Another thing is to identify facilities and recreation programs and volunteer activities. One of the things that we've heard at Parks Board a lot is that simply having space at our quote-unquote parks is all well and good, but what about things to do when you actually go to a park? Are you just going to sit there and say, great, I'm in the park, this is fantastic, thank you, Sable Brio? Or are you wanting to have more of an experience? And what are those experiences? Going to a craft exercise on a Saturday, possibly learning about something on Sunday, volunteer activities. Our current parks plan talks about volunteer activities, but it doesn't really, we have never as a city really decided what those volunteer activities are. And invariably, the mayor will get approached by an innocent and interested citizens group saying, hey, we want to volunteer. We're willing to dedicate literally hundreds of hours of volunteer time for something. What can we do? And the mayor will come to us and say, you guys got any ideas? Because they want to come in this Friday. If the city can identify real and meaningful volunteer activities that are not replicated necessarily by city staff activities, then it's going to be a benefit because we don't need to then pay for those and we can get a lot more things done. And establish clear mechanisms for involvement. Now, a lot of that is going to be up to the Parks Board to help to identify and to sometimes manage those volunteers. Staff proposal. You utilize a fixed-year capital improvement program to manage revenue fluctuations. In 2008, we were at the tail end of one of the biggest development moves in Bernardo's history. And at that time, it made a lot of sense to say, first we're going to acquire that, and we're going to acquire that, and we're going to do this. That didn't turn out to be true, at least in the last 4 years. We didn't have the money to do all those acquisitions. It's likely because development is cyclical that we will have that opportunity again. And that's something that we can do through the six-year capital improvement project list to manage our expectations. We might still have the same or similar vision over 20 years, but since we can't afford that right now, the city council can manage the way that we spend our money in the short term to recognize we don't have a lot of money coming in, so we're going to find smaller projects, fewer projects, or even no projects. Doesn't mean that we can change our vision just because something changes. When we're up high again, we need to remember that we can't spend money like it's going to stop. All right, so now, the roles. Everybody's going to play a vital but different role. We feel that a linear process is going to be most efficient, which means it's unlikely that we're going to get back together as a trifecta of different groups to talk about the progress that we're making. What's more than likely going to happen is the Parks, Recreation, and Trail Board will talk about what could be. You know, what is the vision? What are some conceptual ideas that lead out of this meeting and go into an open house that hopefully the Parks Board can lead? Talk about, gosh, you know, what is possible? What could we do? And then formulate that and at some point deliver that to the Planning Commission, where the Planning Commission is going to be looking and saying, okay, based on this vision, based on this dream, what really should be? You know, what is a little bit more hard, tough feeling approach and saying, gosh, you know, it sure would be great to do this and that, but the realities are maybe we can't do this, or the Planning Commission's expertise and knowledge of going through the public process, gosh, can we do this under the growth management act? Maybe not. So tailoring it down. Of course, there would be interaction between the Parks Board and the Planning Commission. Most likely we have representatives of the Parks Board come throughout the process and say, here was our thinking when we were doing this, and to help to consult with the Planning Commission. Staff would also play that role. Planning Commission would probably hold public workshops, and then would hold a public hearing, and would transmit to council, and the council, which will also hold public meetings and the hearing, would say, based on all of this, we decide what will be. That's the final step. So it is that linear process. There's going to be communication all the way through. But this way, the Parks Board isn't ultimately going to be the body that approves it. Now there's a Planning Commission. The council isn't going to be the body that's doing all this spitballing. Everybody has a vital role to play, but they are different. And it's going to be important as we move through to remember that everybody's going to have their opportunities, but they're not necessarily going to need the same opportunities. All right, almost done. So, questions for you. How extensive should the changes be? from nothing to everything? What assumptions made in 2008 plan are or are not still valid? What staff proposals I just went over should be considered or rejected out of hand? And how extensive should the public process be? Again, if you wanted, I could probably lock myself up in my room and come up with a plan and then put it out. Some people might like it. Most people would probably hate it. It's getting important to have the public engagement because this is the public plan. Unlike the transportation plan and many of our others, it's easy to see how parks work around the world. And everybody is a critic and everyone is also a designer, and that's okay. But the public needs to feel that they were invited in, and they should also see that what they put in is meaningful instead of just either rubber stamping a draft proposal that people in this room have made. And that's it. So, you can ask me questions, but the main intent of this meeting was to talk amongst yourselves, and I think that the mayor could be the best person to help facilitate that.
Okay, so we'll open up to the discussion, the council and the planning commission. We'll turn to the audience if there's any questions. Audience, this probably isn't your time in terms of your general philosophy. If you have a specific action that you'd like the council or planning commission to search on your behalf, we'd love to hear that. So I'll go to council and planning commission first, then I'll see if anyone in the audience wants to speak. So councilperson Ingram is first up, and then I saw councilperson Goodrich.
2008.
Yeah, it's been a while since we have a brand new development come in, but that is the expectation. The one thing, though, is we've always said that sidewalks are not trails.
I think that's a mistake. Because if you've got a trail that starts here and goes to there, but there's a sidewalk that's in the middle of that section, you're not calling a trail. This is part of the trail system.
So, the question is the development that was to the west of Horizon Middle School was going to be, I'm losing his name now.
Blomquist.
Was it?
Blomquist?
Yeah, Blomquist Heights. I couldn't remember the developer's name. He had basically agreed, but did we write that down, that he had trail connectivity to the school, but that was a voluntary situation, and so it wasn't really in ordinance.
He agreed in the preliminary plat, so there was trail connectivity as a condition of the preliminary plat, so he would be bound to that.
And whoever bought that would be bound to it?
Yes, although they are getting close to having that preliminary plat expire, so you have to start over or are over to a certain extent. I would expect that would still be a condition.
So if you start over, the council would, okay, council planning commission still that, okay, great. Councilperson Goodrich?
When we're talking about trails and connectivity, it seems to me it's the horse or the chickens or whatever have all flown the coop, but now we're trying to close the door. To say to a developer, you have to connect to something when we don't have a game plan, we haven't had a game plan. I would think back to some of the master plan communities in Southern California where they went in with a vacant piece of land and said, we're going to build a community here, and here's how our trails are going to go, and if you're going to develop, you have to connect to things. We got the houses are already built. We got 10,000 people already living here, and now we're saying we want to put trails in. To me, that's a contradiction there. Unless, like Paul says, you say sidewalks work or something, unless we're going to start buying up houses and tearing them down so property A project A can connect to project B. I just don't see how that could be a mandatory thing for trail connectivity when there is no plan. Unless somebody else has a good answer for that.
Councilperson Watson?
I have a good answer for that. I guess some more curious about the money part of what you talk about, maintenance and operations, or necessarily how to pay for the maintenance and operations haven't been part of the plan, or did I misunderstand you? And what kind of revenue sources are you talking about? Because I would like to see parks that are more than just grass, because if it is a park, it would be nice for the kids to have someplace to play. I understand the parks are nice, but it's also nice to have something to do with the park. I'm wondering how we can pay for that. Is there, what kind of, the funding we give, you know, because it's stovepipe, what kind of funding comes into the city that we use for the parks?
Well, it's a great time to review for the audience, everyone, I'll turn it to the city administrator in terms of explaining parks mitigation funding and parks operation funding, because it's a little different.
Yeah, park mitigation funds can be used to acquire parks, but ironically, they can be used to operate parks or maintain them.
Can you use that stuff?
Yes. You can purchase parks, you can add to parks, enhance parks, anything that is an addition to as opposed to maintenance or operations. But that's the park mitigation funds. There's kind of a, and you already talked about this kind of a hierarchy. Some funds are very limited. Transportation mitigation funds for transportation, park impact fees are for parks. But on the top of that pyramid is property tax, sales tax, solid waste tax, utility tax, all those general revenues that can be used to fund literally anything the city does. With that said, there are dedicated funds, so we tend to think of how do we fix our roads when we use transportation mitigation funds? How do we acquire parks to use park mitigation funds? But you don't have to be that narrowly used. It's just that the opposite is not true. You can't take park mitigation funds and pay for cops.
Other grants? I mean, other grants, because of the health issue, we could talk about maybe other health, you know, you want people to be outside and playing more, other kind of grants in that area?
Yeah, just like the entire grant world, there's going to be less and less grants because most of the grants come from the state, and we all know the state of the city, if you will. There's less and less money out there. Federal grants are highly competitive because they literally are competing either statewide or nationwide. But there are programs out there, mostly state grants that are on cycles. So like maybe every 3 years, grants for off-road vehicle parks come into play, or every other year, some voting grants come into the place. So there are some niche grants out there, but they're somewhat cyclical. They're not on an annual basis. And because they are less than they used to be, but yet the population of the state is greater than it used to be, you have more people chasing fewer dollars.
So if we build a bunch of good stuff at the parks, and we had to put the mulch down every year, and we had to repaint things, I mean, that would be my public works money? So that would have to come out of the public works?
Public works, or just general fund.
Councilperson Hansen.
There's one more problem with parks mitigation fees, as I understand it, correct me if I'm wrong. My understanding now, and I didn't think it used to be, but it is now my understanding, park mitigation funds must be able to be tied to the growth aspect. So, it's my opinion of this group that as you look at park mitigation fees and how you tie that to growth, use the most liberal method that you can get away with. And I'll give you an example of that. If you plant a tree in Cedar Creek Park or in Pinewood Park, the cost of that tree is a capital expense. But does that, adding that tree, enhance the growth? In other words, can more people use the park as a result of that tree? And my thinking would be we should write the ordinances in such a way that we get as liberal as possible with that so that capital improvements in existing parks don't have to fall into a separate category from parks mitigation. There's a lot of gray area. We should have as much flexibility as possible because it could be written. The only thing
parks mitigation would be used for, would be the acquisition of additional parkland to serve the growth. That's the real conservative way to regulate it. And I'm personally convinced it should go in the other direction as far as possible.
Okay. Before we go to a couple of questions, because you already did touch on it, is an important factor is that with the growth management hearing boards reducing our urban growth boundaries, it reduced the amount of land that basically we have for parks mitigation. So we have reduced the parks mitigation funding for every house that's built. So we have less money in parks mitigation now than we had before, and I think you could argue that, but we still have the same parks. Councilperson Ingram, and then Commissioner Black.
Yeah, to follow up on what Mel was saying, I think it is important to go that direction because we built Griffin Town Park. Now we're in the process of installing the historical plaques for historical people who were in that area. And without going to that take on parks mitigation, we could use park mitigation to add those features, which are really important to the completion of that park.
Good point. Commissioner Black?
A couple points. Just to add to that discussion, I believe that parks mitigation fees can be used for park development as opposed to operations and maintenance. And development can be pretty widely interpreted. I mean, if you want to tear up the entire field and put down an astroturf or something, as far as I'm concerned, that's development. It's an improvement in the facility, so that would all be able to be with mitigation funds. The comment I wanted to make, though, was getting back to trail connectivity. I know I'm going to probably be stepping on some toes in terms of it seems to become kind of a sacred cow, but I, as planning director here, I saw a lot of attempts at connectivity that went completely wrong. I saw in my time people from subdivisions coming to City Hall asking for trail connections to be eliminated. And I saw the City Council approve the elimination of perimeter trails that were initially required in developments like Vista Ridge, because mainly because of questions of privacy. There have been some sections of connectivity between cul-de-sacs and roadways that have been shut down because the adjoining neighbors didn't like what was going on in those corridors, right outside the property. And in general, people don't like to have people walking alongside their property. So you have in Pacific Highlands many instances where you've got these trail connections where people just fenced across or planted over or decided that, hey, I don't want people walking through here between my house. And that picture that you already showed with the, we could just connect those two easements. Well, you're going to have four property owners, that are going to not like that. Now, if you are going to attempt this kind of thing, I think what was said was if you're master planning, do it as part of a new development, that makes a lot of sense. If you're going to do it outside of that, you've got to be really careful about how the design is done. And you need to pull in the police department and people that can speak to where people are going to do mischief. I mean, we don't have many alleys anymore, so, kids, that's where I always got in trouble, was the alleys, but now it's on the trails. And especially these connections where they're somewhat isolated, they may be dark, there's no exposure. So these things have to be designed so that you can see them, there's light. When you're going through these trails, you're not threatening anyone, basically. And I did see a time when the council was wanting to sell off the neighborhood parks because they couldn't maintain them, they didn't want to get rid of them. And I'm not sure that vision in terms of do we want a lot of small parks or do we want some larger parks or how much trail do we really want, how much connectivity do we really want. I'm not sure that vision has been totally established. And I guess what I'm saying is that I think there ought to be a little more discussion about those types of elements before we, at the end of the month, have a plan that the staff has done that's, you know, all based on connectivity and tons of connections. Because I would be willing to bet that once you set out to find all those connections, and you start talking to properties that are adjacent to them, you're going to have some opposition. I would love to see a community that's all connected, walkable, connected, trails and all that, but as a practical matter, I saw this become a real security issue, and one that the police were just, I mean, it was like, please don't put a trail, because we're just going to have to police. So that needs to be well thought of.
Councilperson Goodrich?
I think when we were looking at, to me, new parks and things, I think we need to look at it as, is it an attraction slash visitor drawing aspect to it? Like the up on Bender Park, the Veterans Memorial thing. You know, to me that would be something that would pull people that would be traveling by off the freeway. I know when I travel a lot of times I get the AAA book and I look for some off the wall things. And I remember in, I think it was West Virginia, I found a memorial to World War II submariners. Now, you don't think of West Virginia and submarines in the same thing. So I had to go see what the memorial was to World War II submariners. So I pulled off the freeway and drove, you know, a mile or two and found this beautiful park with this monument to World War II submariners. So to me, I think that's what we need to do. You know, things are an off-leash, fenced off-leash dog park. Right now, you got to drive into Bellingham. As people say, well, you have Vanderjagt Park. If I let my Jack Russell loose in Vanderjagt Park, it's going to be days probably before I find him again. Because he's going to be burrowing down into things and going through bushes and stuff. And without a fence, I probably, you know, it's going to be a while before I see him. So to me, to have that answered is, well, we have Vanderjagt. Maybe for a lab or something that's very behaving, that works great, but not for... for something my dog, so I have to drive into Bellingham if I want to let my dog run free with other dogs. So as Timmy, as we look at future parks or even what to do with our existing parks, I think things like that would be to make Ferndale more of a touristy visitor destination would be more of a benefit to us than to say, oh, we need to plop a whole bunch of new parks in every development or something and have all these little neighborhood parks.
Commissioner Cornwell, excuse me.
No problem.
Ingram, and then
Moore. When Yuri told us the Planning Commission last end of the last summer, into the fall, we were going to have these kind of discussions coming up. I grabbed a map, a parks map, jumped on my mountain bike, and just started riding around town just to see what, gosh, I didn't know we had that many parks. Where are all these things? And started driving around, riding around, and, oh, that's a park. And sometimes they were just a little patch of grass, you know. And other times they were, I didn't even know this existed. And then we have a park. I live in Vista Ridge, and we have a park, I guess, that was part of that development that came in. And, you know, it's a bunch of grass. And there's a little play area. The play area gets used a lot. The grass area doesn't because it's so wet. And most of the year you really can't go do anything out there because it's just so muddy. You just sink right in. It's kind of boggy. And to me, as I was listening to all this great feedback, it's really a values question that I think we're looking at as a community is what do we value? And so when I look at a park, I'm going to have my filters about what a good park is, you know. And Yuri was saying, well, it sounds like at one point in time it was more parks land equal better parks. And, you know, so is a park that has swing sets and a swimming pool and a little zoo and a bunch of tractors, is that better than a park that just maybe has some native vegetation that's set, you know, set up in a real feng shui way that makes you have inner peace? You know, depends on who you ask, right? And so, you know, I'm sure that there are some of these smaller parks that serve a purpose that breaks up, just like we saw in that one picture, house after house after house after house after house. You know, there's a value to the community in that, in just... the beauty of a natural environment. But I look at my own personal experience with parks and the parks that I use, and I use parks that have amenities that were, and I, you know, like Hovander is a park, it's a county park, but the reason we went to Hovander over the years is because our kids liked little tractors to sit on, and a little zoo, and this big tower you could climb up, and picnic tables everywhere, and a pavilion, and access to the river, and you could actually jog and stay right in that park because it's so big. You can run and get a workout in that one park. You can park and run a couple miles and not go to the same trail twice. And then we've also used parks in Bellingham, you know, down there at Lake Sammish, Lake Whatcom, Paddon. How many times I've driven to Paddon going, I can't believe I'm using this much gas to drive to Paddon, but I go there because it's this really cool lake with parks and little pavilions, and I can meet my friends there, and then we run 2.6 miles and a tennis court, and it's all right there, you know? So that's what's a value to me, but I don't know that that's a value to the community. I'm wondering about a rating system of rate, and maybe it already exists. Do we rate parks based on what value it brings? This park right here brings value because it's green open space. This park brings value because it has amenities for children. This park brings value because it's a waterfront feature. I mean, I think waterfront features are huge. You look at probably the jewel in the crown for Whatcom County is Boulevard Park because of its water feature. And I think those are a huge draw for people in terms of value. So if a success of a park is people using the park, then it's going to be those amenities. But I don't know that that's necessarily success. But that's been my observation. One last thing, and thanks for putting up with me. Trails, connectivity, the whole thing. When we moved into Grouse Circle, it was a relatively new neighborhood. There were no fences around, or very few fences around any of the houses. We didn't have any fences on our house. And I saw this. Kids would get out of school, and they could come down, and they could basically cut through our neighborhood, and they'd cut through our yard, and then go down into that Sunshine neighborhood. I thought, well, that's kind of cool. You know, I'm going to create my own little trail system, and without even realizing what I was doing. And so I got some gravel, put it in there, planted some plants, some nice little edging and stuff, and it went right along the side of our house and down in the neighborhood below. And that was in for about 3 weeks. My wife goes, hey, all those plants that we put in are all tore up. What? Sure enough, somebody had tore out all of our little shrubs. So I go, well, let's go to the store and get some more. Start over. Got it all set up again, the bark and everything. About 2 weeks later, tore up. I'm like, done. Putting up fences. So at that point in time, got the fences up, and then kids were climbing over the fences. So we got to put a fence on the front of the house. That pretty much took care of it. They had to climb over two fences at that point in time. So I agree with what Tom's saying on the connectivity thing. I wanted it. I love the idea, the concept, of the idealistic nature of it. But in reality, my experience was not positive.
Interesting. Councilor Singer?
Part of Brett's question about things like fence holidays are 3 years ago the Chamber of Commerce, myself, planning director designed an off-leash dog park fenced at the north end of Marriott Park, got a price on it, got a quote from the fencing companies to do it with two gates. It's a great idea. It was going to remove a bunch of shrubs that the druggies like to use to hide behind, and the price was $92,000, and we were told to get us. So these ideas are not new. They've been around for a long time. Golf, just frisbee golf thing there at Vanderbilt. While that might seem like a silly thing to some people, last year there were 8 tournaments there. Talking to the gal that runs Second Avenue Sports, she says so far this year she's been told 14, including the biggest one on the West Coast. So that part is drawing some really big numbers. And I think it would behoove the city to look at possibly cleaning it up a little bit, making sure that the trails that go through Vanderbilt are a little bit better spruced up at least. They tend to get a little mushy in the wintertime. Come springtime, late spring, they're still dips and wet spots. I don't think it would break our budget to get a little bit better.
Dobson and then Henson.
I just about forgot what I was going to say. I don't want to be a killjoy, but I look at the capital improvement program in the master plan, the 2008 update, and 2008, I'm not sure what even was done then, and then you get down to 2009, 2010, no way. So I would say, let's pull some of this off. I mean, it's have that proposals, but you know, we're just kind of down to no money for a lot of this, then it would be better to concentrate on some things that we can do rather than having that whole all the pages of things. Okay, that's one. I'm really not a killjoy with parks because I had two children graduate from Western in the rec department with a parks major. Well, neither one of them have jobs now, and you know why? Because even the county parks are down to one major for like two regular parks. So, you know, you've got to be realistic with the money. I look at how you're dividing up the percentages of where it's coming from. Well, the city's going to pay 30%, and maybe, I don't think so, now. And then it gets down to grants, 10%. Even then, grants, you know, they're just like this. So if you pull back a little bit and concentrate on some things we can do, it seems like it would be better. Also, Brent, it's not fenced in, but we don't drive in a dog hand. We take our dog to the park that is connected to Hogan. It's a little more, you can keep your whistle under control. And it's connected to Hogan. Okay. We're not Bellevue where you have to drive 10 miles to get to really good parks. Hogan is right there. Pioneer Park is right there. So even if we pull back on some of these other things, we've got a dark little park system around us to go around.
What's the question? What?
Question. How will we fit in with what county plans? I know they keep talking about that Nooksack River Trail. Are we mentioning any of our trails?
Oh, the Nooksack Loop Trail?
Yeah, and the rest of the county, and also the LTEC funds. Because that brings, using it, let's say you're going to do something more with the park, you know, you're going to come play.
Well, we're kind of an important part of the Nooksack Loop Trail because the Nooksack Loop Trail comes up, walks through where Commissioner Moore and I walk our dog, it's, you know, from Slater all the way through Hobander and gets to the Nooksack Bridge. And the Nooksack Loop Trail system does not work unless there's a bridge from River Place across to Vandyock, because then they're going up the other side of the river. And so the whole system falls unless there's a bridge across to Vandyock. So that's an important fact. It's interesting, Commissioner Moore and I, we meet and we walk our dogs there, and it shows you that it's not ADA, it's not a former trail, it's a dirt pathway that every Saturday and Sunday people walk their dogs and adequately works. They don't put any money into that. It's because people created their own trail. We're going to walk alongside the river here. Basically, that trail was created by people walking their dogs, so it doesn't satisfy ADA requirements, but certainly, boy, every weekend everybody uses it. So it doesn't necessarily have to be a trail that's gravel and okay, it's muddy. Sometimes people do. But, so it's kind of interesting. It's maybe sometimes we look and go, oh, we want this formal trail with all this money, and that's great for ADA requirements. But if it isn't, it's like the children in any neighborhood, they'll create their own trail if they want to. Certainly, I did as a child. Commissioner Black.
Yeah, I had a couple of other points I wanted to make. I guess one of the things gets down to development standards, subdivisions, PUDs, that type of thing. It seems to me that we could improve ourselves a bit and have more flexibility if we were to start recognizing that within each new development, whether it's a straight subdivision or it's a PUD, that there should be both a public and a private component to parks, recreation, open space. And especially if we get into being able to achieve a lot of connectivity in new developments, that's where it's like I can go to your development and spend time, you're over, like Vista Ridge, I can go to your park because I'm in the next one over. I've paid an impact fee that takes into account that I'm providing some private open space, which I'm required to do, and then I'm providing a public component within the same space that is usable by my neighbors. I think that way we might be able to reduce a lot of straight impact fees that if we were to fold it into requirements for open space. The other comment I had was when I looked at the parks and the master plan, nowhere in the plan, the 20-year plan, do I see the establishment of the Parks and Rec Department in the city of Ferndale. And yet it talks about having world-class facilities, and they can tell you that we aren't going to have any world-class facilities until we have a Parks and Rec Department and the maintenance that goes along with it and the care that goes along with it. I mean, we're talking about the parks and building elements, right? Maintaining. So at some point in this development of the master plan, we need to think about at what point in time are we as a city going to raise this issue to the level of priority where we actually establish a partner for this. I just have a hard time taking it seriously when we don't have a parks and rec. Because I know the public works can't do the job. They've got too much on their plate. And the last point I wanted to make was in the long term view, we need to also be thinking about the parks and the trail sorts of things which we want to have as destination locations when people come, like we're talking about, come to the city in order to do a particular block or a particular hike. It's nice. We need to be connecting with, again, with Lummi Nation, because they have vast potential for parks, types of development, various parks and types of development, wilderness experiences and things like that. And as Paul said, your trail system isn't necessarily a solid trail. It may be connected by a sidewalk. It may be connected by a shuttle bus, you know, where you do a tour in Ferndale, and then at the same time, you know, you get in your bus and you go head out to Lummi where they've got some, you know, a trail through the wetlands and the delta. Things like that. There's just a lot of potential there in various aspects where the two communities can coordinate. And instead, they've got tons of potential for parks development and, you know, connecting things like Pioneer Park with Lummi Nation. It's a stretch maybe sometimes, considering the history, but at some point in time, I think we're all going to be thinking of that as common history. So.
Good. Councilperson Hanson, and then
something to think of in the long term.
Okay. Councilperson Hanson, and then Commissioner LeBay.
Tom hit on one of my comments a little bit, so I'll just keep it brief. I think we need to look at the connectivity issue of trails differently than what we did. I'm hearing a lot of agreement with this. When it's possible to connect trails and parks together with a trail that's not on a road, great. But if you can't do that, the connectivity can be on a sidewalk. Because if I'm walking a trail and I want to get from this park and not have to go a mile and a half, and there's a sidewalk in between, that's the way we go. And hopefully we're building the sidewalks to be safe to our children and seekers and everyone else. So, as this thing develops, hopefully we will look at sidewalks as a part of the solution to connectivity. The other point I was going to make is Tim talked about Larford and spoke We don't have a development here. And we don't have any private, well, I guess we've got a couple of private lakes that are really more ponds. But we sure have that river. And the river is probably as big an asset for us as some of those other water feature assets are in any other community. And the success of Park of the Rivers, Front Street Park, that's just, you know, beyond all of our wildest expectations. And my opinion is that we use the river as an asset and develop wherever possible.
Great. Commissioner LePage?
I have a couple of questions and maybe a suggestion or two. How many citizen-proposed facilities have you gotten over the last 10 years for a park?
Gosh.
Just, you know, 100, 2?
Yeah, at least a couple of dozen.
Okay, a couple of dozen over 10 years.
Okay. Times my experience by 2, so maybe never looking at 50. I've heard about this.
Would it be a consideration to send a poll out to the public through the Parks Board to see what their feelings are? I know we've had visioning in the town, and there's been a bunch of ideas for different things, Double Dome being one of them, just wondering. And per capita, how many parks does an average city have? Do you have that data?
I don't have that data. I heard the other day that Parks and Recreation agencies, not agencies, association, says that an average of, something like 25 to 35 acres of parks per 1,000 people is the optimum desired amount.
Although I don't know if they measure it that way anymore. That might be, they recently revised that.
To more connectivity, well.
To usable versus unusable on distance.
So you'd say that we're about in where we should be average wise.
It depends on what you measure.
That's the thing I'm getting to. It's the LOS. I'm going to say level of success. Commissioner Moore and Councilman Watson brought up some great points. You know, we have to go with what we have, and I believe Planning Commissioner Black said it too. You know, we can use those funds to improve what we have. Councilman Watson wants to see more of what we can have as a draw for these parks or tourists or things like that. I'm just thinking that a multi-use facility shouldn't be restricted to a Double Dome or a World Class. By the way, World Class was the buzz thing in the mid-90s, so I don't give it a lot of credence. World Class to me is citizen participation and making something successful that the community has value added in. And that way it will only grow. It's like watering a plant that will nourish itself, you know. As to Councilman Hansen's point about using sidewalks, I agree 100%. We're probably going to end up mall walking Ferndale is what we're going to do. Whether we're stepping on a stone, a dirt trail, or a sidewalk, or jaywalking, which is not illegal out here in Ferndale. But all that being said, I think we can do a lot with what we have right now instead of, I'm perceiving, biting off more than we can chew. But the future planning for connectivity should be done by the citizens along with the members here to make the smartest moves before a development goes in. That way, you're going to resolve the crime issue and the safety issue and the maintenance issue. All those lights you're going to have is going to just cost tons. But the improvement on lights and solar and everything else is going to help that. But I don't think I've taken up as much time as Commissioner Cromwell, but I'm going to finish with that.
Councilor Ingram and then Goodwin. from?
Well, I'll try to be brief. When I first moved here, I looked at a map.
I think we look at parks as for kids. And I like what Serge sent out here recently, the River Place, where it had the senior area, or the term that you believe in me now, where part of the park is geared for the older folks with some of the things that would be an interest to them. I think we forget about that. We think about the people on the mountain bikes and the people with kids that enjoy the swing sets. Well, at this point in my life, I don't have kids to swing is going to be possible with and stuff. So look at things a little differently. And I think we need to think about that in too with parks. How do we deal with, because a park is great when a neighborhood is new, the families come in with all their kids, but now the kid in 15 years, those kids are grown and gone. What's that swing set doing to that park until the grandkids come around? Or whatever. So maybe there's going to need to be a looking at our parks. Are they meeting the needs now versus when they were put in? And maybe we need to pull that swing set out and put in something differently to meet the needs of the elder sports. Yeah, that's it.
Commissioner LeBay.
I've got to say, I think Councilor Ingram's idea is very good, and it should be considered as a look, because that would help us with our ski-to-see issue as well. If we promoted something like that and made it ADA accessible as possible, that would really be a great, it would be an event, it would be a place to come to the Ferndale, so I have to second that. I think that would be a good idea. Because it's water related.
Not as very expensive.
No,
not at all. Councilor
Snigger? No upkeep.
Thank you very much. I appreciate your support on that. I think Barbara actually might be able to answer this better than I can, but because I was in meetings all day, I think Wenatchee has a water trail. Runs right down the through the center of town where they've got that long walking trail. And I think they've got water trail, where if you're on water, you can see the same signage, you can pause and see the little
aging wall color?
I think so. But I can't remember being the newer age.
And some of the travel will put the things that I've been out and I've seen you guys on some of the national
Great. One area where we haven't talked about that we've tried, Greg and I tried and failed, doesn't mean that we can't try and fail again, but as Commissioner Moore talked about, and all you know, that we're always fighting funds, and funds are short, and where it really doesn't work in the fact that the school district has basic playgrounds and grass area, the city does, and we try to do a combination of, well, there's no sense the school district having 7 lawnmowers, and we have 7 lawnmowers, and they have this and they have that, and a combination and a credit for each. Certainly when Mountain View closes, that doesn't mean that kids aren't going to go play on their playground on weekends. And so, you know, you look in terms of the great playgrounds, you know, Mr. Nordhaus is doing a great job and the Star Park is a wonderful idea, but our better playgrounds are on school district property, and the latest new ones have been done by volunteers. You know, they just figured out a way to pay for the equipment, and so there's a combination that has school district certainly is not saying we have an abundance of money, nor is the city, and there should be a combining where, hey, a weed eater works as well on city property as it does on school properties. Councilperson Watson?
Insurance question. We put up a sign at the city guidance saying you can't play here if you're not a resident, and that's just so if someone hurts.
Boy, you're nasty, aren't you?
Everybody does, so it doesn't matter.
Stopping kids from playing. Ah, terrible. Don't play.
I'm wondering, insurance-wise, how that works. I mean, if we don't care if the kids play, but we had to put up a sign saying we had to live here for insurance reasons. So if the kids, if we're kind of pushing people to the schools to play, the schools are okay with that, right? Because we're just going to have people play in schools.
Well, schools are a public facility, as is a park, so they're both public facilities with a larger liability policy.
But if the city's trying to follow you in and say, here's your connection, here's your trail, take it down to the park,
well, our problem was just trying to get, I'll be honest with you, our problem was getting 2 unions to mesh was the problem. We were not successful.
To add to that, though, Councilmember Watson, we only insure our facilities. So once they were on that property, we're not insuring that. It would be under their policy.
We're just going to tell everybody to say hi. No fun for kids. Yes?
What's the name?
Hey, Cromwell.
Yeah,
I got that.
Yeah, you need to give me a light or something.
I wish you
You know, I think when I think about our parks in Ferndale, I think they're fantastic. I think we have incredible parks here. I think what we did down at Riverwalk or River Place or
Riverwalk.
Yeah, it is. That is gorgeous. I mean, that is a beautiful park. It takes advantage of the river. There is, you know, because there is impermeable surface, but in the Northwest, you can use that year-round. And with concrete, I mean, I think it's a great use of space, and it's a real nice entrance into the city. I agree with Joanne, though. We can talk about what we want from parks and all this pie in the sky, but reality is, you've got to make those values. It goes back to what I said at the beginning, the value judgments, and what do we think is most valuable, and how do you pay for it? It's got to be reasonable. Because, we can all get creative about all this space, but you have to draw the line somewhere.
Councilor Singer?
Well, I think I
more.
Sometimes I can't remember my own name, but I'll take it personally. If we can use park mitigation money to add amenities to an existing park, capital improvement project, I think it would be sweet if we could take a couple of the smaller area parks in the neighborhoods throughout the city and put in a miniaturized version of the Riverwalk Fund. If you want to have the best time of your entire life on a sunshiny summer day and just sit down on the edge of a bench and watch about 400 kids just take that fountain completely over. It is it's the biggest hoot you'll ever have. It's just an absolute blast. If we could take that experience and move it to a couple of other locations where maybe
sure that those improvements are specifically listed in the plan so that it's not just writing a check for improvement as it comes to our mind, but actually putting those in the plan, then we can start crossing them off. Because that's the big thing, is if the improvements are listed in the plan, we can say, this is what we're using the money for, rather than, hey, we just thought of this and we're going to use that money that was supposed to be for this improvement on something else. So we can certainly do that. It's just proactively looking at it once a year in the CIP.
Now, has the council commission kind of answered the question, giving you a direction, or do you have any other directions you'd like them to go for?
Well, I have five things, main things. Think creatively with trails and trail connectivity. Maybe not put a whole lot on it, but see where there can be improvements. Look at destination parks and destination facilities. And connected to that, look at tourist-oriented things as well as just for the existing citizens of Birmingham. Be very conscious of maintenance and operations costs and the ongoing costs. And then kind of just general park awareness of what do we actually have and how are we promoting to our citizens.
I think you missed that. I really like Tim's suggestion in terms of some kind of a feedback from our citizens and ideas like SurveyMonkey or some other way. There's easier ways to get opinions from our citizens, certainly go over the crowd tonight, but there's other ways, and that's a great thing, is we haven't done that in a while. What are you looking for from our citizens? And I think Commissioner LeBay was on the same angle of, okay, let's ask people, what is your priority? Maybe it's completely different. Maybe these gentlemen are going to say, hey, I want a bike course.
Skateboard park.
So let's obviously we're being extremely brief. Let's figure it out. I don't know who is with me. This is the most uncomfortable chair I've ever sat in. I don't know who is on this chair.
My parents never knew where we were. We were just everywhere.
when I had kids, I was the typical help out parent. Knew where they were and how far they were. And my concern is, who's going to watch these children in the river and kind of police them? What kind of liability does the city of Burnville have for potential accidents?
Just have a big science next for the
trial. I'll throw that to the city administrator. I don't know. I mean, if you had a dock or an avenue, we have access to the river now. They can go on the sandbar, they can walk over, they can jump the fence at the river walk, and our insurance, it's kind of like an assumed personal liability.
Yeah, not to assume the signs of no light burn on duty. That's one of those coming here behind kind of deals. There is no city responsibility to ensure that everyone is safe everywhere they go. Kids, adults have access to the river. If we were to have access to the river, we would simply be posted that with no lifeguard using our own risk.
Okay. Paul?
Well, in the craziest, most dangerous time on the river, you see about 1,000 crazy EDC canoes coming down that river before war at flood stage. And it's like, they're mad and they're crazy, they're absolute idiots. And they come out of there, they're half underwater when they pull up to the pullout of Hoopamper. I mean, literally, they're half sunk because they've rolled over two or three times. It's just part of the river culture. It's just part of living near the water. When the time that we lived down and commuted the Russian River Trail, in that time frame, probably three people drowned over 15 years or so over there. And nobody ever followed us. It was just that you're stupid enough to be out there on the rivers in flood stage. You get what you want, you know. It just wasn't a problem. Search and rescue, put notice in the paper that if you are crazy enough to go out into the river run at a dangerous level, don't expect us to come and get you. It's not going to happen.
Sounds on the Green River every year. And we hear the warnings, it's on TV every time. I think it was a flood stage. No, the Green River shouldn't be used now because it's too fast. And it's still around.
Yeah. The ship was signed to report. Anyone else? Yeah. Some good comments? No? Search is quiet. Okay, anything else? You look like
white trails.
What's that?
More white trails.
Yeah, more white trails. Good idea. Okay, we're not going to do any reports or anything. A great meeting. We kind of have direction for Yori. We'll get back to the next steps, but a good first discussion. Great. Worked out well being here, so thank you.
Tell us the next meeting you'd like us or something.
There you go.
Yeah. Do something.
Well, I'm going to talk to Mr. Kinley tomorrow. Hey, I think we're the first big meeting. I've been to a couple of meetings here, but they're really small. And I'll give you some quick information about the facility. Behind you, the dream there is they'll have a canoe carving exhibition, totem pole carving exhibition, so people can come watch that. Their office is here, seafood market, and then arts and crafts there. And then across the way is spirits, cigarettes, and whatever else you'd like to purchase there. So hopefully this will be a facility that gets more used. So I'd entertain a motion to adjourn. Second? All favor signify by saying aye, and commissioners, you can vote too. Say aye. We're adjourned. Thank you all for coming.
And then we get on there.